Just one preseason game remains. The final cuts are coming this weekend. Welcome into Flight Plan, the latest edition. We're going to dive into what to expect from Frank Reich's offense. We're going to get into that roster. Zach's going to give kind of his predictions or thoughts heading into the weekend on who's going to end up still being on this roster on the other side of the weekend. So lots to get to. Some fun rumors swirling around the Jets that Zach has some thoughts on as well. So lots to get to. Tim McMaster here with Zach Rosenblatt and Paul Kilgallen. Please like the show wherever you're watching or listening. Give us those big five-star reviews. And of course, welcome on YouTube to the baggage handlers tuning in to the stream. And Paul is mobile this week, on the road, on vacation, still joining us and giving away his location with his hat if you're watching on YouTube. But Lake Winnipesaukee, Paul, I was saying I've been there so many times because my parents actually have a timeshare up there. I went like 2 years ago. It was the first time in 10 or 15 years. But when I was little, I used to go, we went every year for a week.
Yeah, I mean, I love it up here. I was going to say parts unknown here, but I am wearing the hat. So unfortunately, I did kind of give it away. I've been
everybody in Lake Winnipesaukee, every Jet fan in Lake Winnipesaukee now is like, where's Paul? Where's Paul?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. It's funny, Jets wearing Jet stuff is a magnet for attention anywhere. But especially up here, people chirp me up here, obviously, you know. Don't need a detective to figure out the reasoning there, but yeah, I love it up here. I've been coming up here my whole life. It's the internet is a little challenging usually, but it seems like we're in good shape today. So happy to be with you guys. Couldn't miss 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, good to have you back for sure. Before we get into the offense, Zach, and the roster and all of that, I know that you did have some thoughts on. There was this report this week about Mike Tomlin. Now we're year two of Aaron Glenn. Good vibes around Aaron Glenn, I feel like, right now. So there you go. Somebody had to throw a wrench in the mechanics.
I'll try and be nice about this.
You can be nice. I don't have to because I'm not getting paid by anybody. So
Yeah. What I would say is I feel like the fan base, it seems like, has had the proper reaction to this report. I don't get the sense that anybody's taking it especially seriously. Woody Johnson is not digging into Mike Tomlin right now. Like I can tell you that with absolute certainty. Like I get that Aaron Glenn is an easy target right now. And I think that's what a lot of this is. And, you know, when you talk to an anonymous GM from another team, they can say whatever they want. This is not the case. They have not discussed Mike Tomlin. What people don't realize about Aaron Glenn, especially the people that hate him so much, is that he has a very good relationship with Woody Johnson. Like I feel like that's kind of not talked about as much as it maybe should be. Like the two of them get along very well. Woody hired him. He wants him to succeed. Like he's not going to go and start researching and talking about, oh, I'm going to hire Mike Tomlin when I fire this coach that I'm currently paying like $12.5 million a year or whatever it is. So I'm gonna have to keep on paying him. I would then also have to trade a first round pick to the Steelers probably. And then I'm going to also have to pay Mike Tomlin, making him probably one of the five highest paid coaches in the NFL. Like he's not doing that right now. Like, I don't know what source close to Woody would even say that. Cause I don't see it. So that's what I'll say about that. Like, I wasn't even going to address it originally. I saw it blowing up a little bit, but more in the way of Jets fans making fun of the report is the vibe I got. But yeah, I'd say this is much ado about nothing. I think people who want Aaron Glenn to fail and want him to be fired are going to latch onto this as fact now and go forward and talk about it as if it's true. But everything I know and everybody I talk to both in and around the Jets, like, yeah, this isn't happening. So
I just want to check my notes here. This was posted on casino.org. Do I have that right? That's where this was posted by Jason Lockenfora. So, yeah, I mean, I took issue with a couple things in it. Number one, that he called Aaron Glenn a dead man. Like, I think that was the exact words, dead man walking. And everyone knows it, I think he wrote. Like, it's just not true. You lost me in the first paragraph with that. Like, it's just not true. And I don't need to be as close to the building as you are to know that. Like, he's not a dead man walking. He has a chance here. And, I'm relieved to hear your take on it, because that would make for a really difficult working environment, you know, in any working environment, never mind a professional football organization that's missed the playoffs for 15 years. So, you know, again, I don't have any inside information, but it just smacked of something that just blatantly wasn't true. And the lie got more and more fantastic as you read on the article, because it wasn't only that. It was, oh, and they're also going to go get Lamar Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Lamar Jackson wants to come to New York because of this, this, and this. And like, I was just reading it. I was like, oh my God, like, what is this thing? And especially the timing of it, you know, right at the end of the preseason, right as the season's about to get rolling. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of your peers, Zach, like, he's kind of, he's posting articles on casino.org for a reason, right? So
the one other thing I'd add into this is that Mike Tomlin was obviously extremely successful coach. And I think when he's ready to get back into coaching, there will be many teams interested in him. And I'm not sure the Jets would be at the top of his list as they are currently constructed.
Yes.
You know, like,
yeah. I mean, look,
he's
like
he's going to have his choice to a degree.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. And I'd say if the Jets do wind up moving on from Aaron Glenn at some point, he'll be someone who everybody lists at the top of like who they should target or whatever. But I do not envision a future where Mike Tomlin is coaching the New York Jets. Like maybe somebody can clip this and then if it happens, I can be called an idiot, but I just don't see that happening. So.
All right, let's move on to reality and the Jets and the offense, and we'll start there. Frank Reich, Zach, you have a great story on The Athletic right now where you talk to a lot of people, including Reich, but Garrett Wilson weighed in and Bree, and a lot of people that talk to other people that know Frank. It was like very well-rounded about kind of what to expect. It gets into, obviously, Frank's path too, which is very interesting, but I want to kind of focus on from that what we should expect from this Jets offense this year, because I think we've spoken about it a lot. Like, we need to see a Frank Reich that's willing to adapt, and this offense needs to change and all of that, which is funny when I was reading the article, because you kind of open it with like Garrett Wilson saying, yeah, this is like the old days, man, like Terrell. Owens and
Terrell Owens
and you know, just get open and throw you the ball and like the old school vibes, which goes against the current NFL. But let's start there. Like, I thought that was really interesting that was kind of Garrett's take on what could happen here, because it feels like the whole league has gone a different direction.
Yeah, like I think about it in like a couple different ways. Like, I think, you know, we won't know how much Frank Reich has adapted into the new NFL until the season starts. Like, I think he even said we're going to be purposely generic in the preseason. And I mean, that drive with Geno looked pretty good last week, but, you know, like, it obviously didn't go great in Carolina, and it wasn't good at the end in Indy. There were circumstances out of his control. Like, Carolina, the owner was, you know, questioning every decision he made and forcing him to do things. And you had coaches and GMs talking behind his back, and he got fired midseason. And the last year in Indy, he had Matt Ryan as his quarterback, 40 years old, couldn't throw the ball anymore. And, you know, Jim Irsay at the time was pretty involved and brought Jeff Saturday in to replace him. But like the obvious knock against Frank, he hasn't called plays in the NFL since 23, and it didn't go well then. So there's reason for skepticism for sure. But I think like my big takeaway from that conversation I had with Garrett, and just, even just in general, what these guys have been saying throughout the summer is more that, like, he's taking more into account what each individual player is good at when he's structuring this offense, when he's calling plays. He's putting it in there to where, like, you know, I mean, I can't imagine he's doing this for everybody, but if he feels like you can handle, like, okay, Garrett, if you see this from this corner, like, it's okay if you cut the other way from the planned route. The key, obviously, is Geno Smith needs to be in tune with these guys doing that, and, like, there's a lot of factors at play, but I like that broad idea of, you know, highlighting what the players are good at as opposed to trying to fit players into a scheme, which, you know, as I'm sure Paul will say, like, we've seen a lot of guys come through here try and do that, and it didn't work out very well. So, you know, I there was reasons to be encouraged by Frank in the preseason. I think they did a lot of motion, which he didn't historically do. I think you're going to see doing more 12 personnel, which he didn't historically do. We really won't know what the offense looks like I said, until the season starts, and it largely depends on Geno. But, you know, my point of writing that story was more like, this is how everybody in the building feels about Frank Reich, more than me saying like, this is going to work. This is, you know, he's the perfect OC, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think some of the reaction of people who just want to, you know, be negative or whatever are, you know, oh, writing another puff piece, or like I saw some comments at The Athletic of like, you know, painting it with a rosy picture as if Frank is this perfect OC. But like, that's not how I wrote the story. I wrote it, like, if you read it, I didn't put an ounce of opinion about what's going to happen. It was just more like the players are really into this in a way that I don't think they were for the last few offensive coordinators, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the surface, there was like, you know, when I was first reading the article, and great, great article, by the way, Zach, like,
thanks.
There was a little bit of an element of like, oh, he's doing old stuff. Like, is that kind of what we were all nervous about right out of the gate, was that he does not have the ability to adapt. But then as you got through the article and you kind of heard all the, like, the evidence that you amassed along the way, right? It was like, well, his playbook has actually grown exponentially over the years through all these stops that he's been at. And, you know, he's meeting with Seth Ryan every week, which I thought was like an interesting kind of thing that you just tossed in there too, right? Of like, maybe Seth Ryan is, you know, kind of what we thought of, like, maybe there is a sneaky kind of, I don't want to overstate things, but like, an up and coming guy in Seth Ryan, and playing to the player strengths. And like you said, that relies heavily on a quarterback who can be in sync with the receivers and has the veteran mind of football to be able to know and anticipate the same thing that Garrett is anticipating. I also thought it was interesting the way you pointed out the last few years of Jets offenses here, of like, you know, LaFleur was more scheme over everything. Like, I kind of always go back to Gase when I think about scheme over everything, but LaFleur was that way too. He came from the Shanahan tree. And one of the things that I think we were excited about when Aaron Rodgers came here was that we all saw what he used to do with Davante Adams, where they would exchange a look at the line of scrimmage, or, you know, they would have some words in the huddle or whatever it was, and then they would go off script and do something. And we thought it was going to be the same way. But I think when in practice, that turned into, no, Garrett Wilson, you don't have an opinion on how this goes. This is me telling you to do something, right? So it didn't give him that freedom. It was just Aaron Rodgers' freedom to do whatever he wanted. And he would light you up if you strayed off that path. And so,
And clearly Garrett didn't take to that.
Right.
At all.
No.
Yeah. And when you frame it up like that, through the course of Garrett Wilson's time here, it, of course, he feels liberated and freed by what's going on right now. And so, I think I've been saying all along throughout training camp that as long as Frank shows the willingness to change and adopt modern things, that doesn't mean you need to go completely run the Shanahan offense or whatever offense is in flavor right now. And I think that kind of at the end of the article where you got to, at least in my opinion, reading it, was like, it's this nice blend of being able to take older concepts and an element of what's old is new again, because nobody else is doing this. So maybe there is kind of an edge in doing that at this point, while also embracing newer things and trying to work in some of the more modern concepts of the NFL. And I think you go back to, and I hate to bring up Bill Belichick in a positive light, but I think that was always one of his greatest strengths on both sides of the ball, which was just like, hey, like, I don't really run anything totally specific. It's just, I'm going to take a look at the personnel I have around here and I'm going to build something that fits that. And so it felt like Frank is at least attempting to blend a few different concepts here of like, hey, I'm going to use my best players to get open. I'm going to embrace some modern things. I'm going to talk to younger guys like Seth Ryan. I'm going to grow my playbook based on where I've stopped along the way. And I'm also going to lean into some modern concepts as well, but it's all going to be built around the strength of my roster. And so I think what I came out with was like a really encouraging picture of what could be, and we'll see how that works in practice when the bullets start flying, because everybody, you know, the Tyson quote, like, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? And so once it's game day, we'll see what that looks like, but I thought it was really encouraging.
Reading the article also, Zach, I thought it made, I mean, there weren't a lot of options out there, right, when it came to quarterback.
Yeah, like,
there was
for
only
sure.
so many. But reading the article, Geno does make sense to me when you read through, like, you know, Geno goes back a little bit in time to older offenses. And that's and true, he man. Does seem okay. like not an, we didn't think in every way he was like the right fit for Frank Reich. But after reading that article, to me, it made sense that this is the guy that Frank maybe wanted also, along with Aaron Glenn, to lead this team, at least this season.
Yeah, I mean, Geno is kind of an old school quarterback. He's kind of a gunslinger type of guy. I did want to shout out something. Like, so someone that responded to the article is this guy named Ryan Paganetti. He used to work in the analytics. He was a coach with the Eagles when Frank Reich was there. And he quote tweeted my article and said some stuff about Frank. I think the biggest takeaway for me from it, well, first he was like, don't be surprised if the Jets come out of nowhere to outperform current expectations, which I think Jets fans will like to hear. But he's clearly very high in him because he pointed out that he has a very great attitude on analytics, which I think you wouldn't expect for somebody who's like an older coach like that. He said, from my own standpoint, we went from a coach who was strong advocate for analytics usage to at least one of the replacements caring less than zero about it and doing the opposite. So he's taking a shot at, I think, Press Taylor. But, you know, that's notable. The Jets have invested in analytics and that side of things. And so, like, the idea that he's just, like, ignoring the data or whatever, like, it sounds like it's not true from somebody who would know, I would say. So there's reasons to be encouraged. I've had a lot of people reaching out to me being like, why are you doing this? You're giving me hope. Like, why would you do that? Like, this article will give me hope.
About including me. Coordinator.
Yeah, including Paul. Got a lot of DMs and comments and stuff like that. I'd be like, how dare you? But, you know, this is that time of the year, too. Like, we'll see if everybody's in love with Frank in week 8. But I think personality-wise, it also is, like, personality-wise, if you go through their OCs, like, Tanner, I don't think he was a bad guy or anything. I mean, he was a little more subdued. Hackett was, I won't even talk about him. I've already said enough about him in my life.
That feels like a Downing, fever dream that happened. Like, yeah,
it really does. Yeah, but I mean, like, Todd Downing, again, kind of subdued. You have LaFleur, kind of keeps to himself, you know, wunderkind type of guy. Whereas Frank Reich, I mean, he was a head coach, which is a factor. Like, he was a pretty good head coach until it got bad at the end. But high energy, loves football, great relationship guy. Like, people just like being around him and playing for him. He played in the NFL for a long time. Like, he's kind of different in the personality side of things. So you could see why these guys are, like, buying into him. Like, every single one of them talks about his energy. Like, that's the first thing that comes up. So so you like to hear for a 65-year-old. While I do think it's important to acknowledge the, you know, the possibility it doesn't work, and that he is stuck in his old ways or whatever. But I think there's reasons to be encouraged too, based on what we've seen.
All right. Should we get on to the roster? Yeah, who will be on the opening day roster for this Jets team? We'll start in the offense. We'll go through the D. We'll go, Zach, you can give your thought on each position, and then Paul just weigh in on the reacting to it. I mean, we'll start at quarterback, obviously.
Yeah. So I have Geno and Cade making it, obviously, and I don't see Bailey, Zappe, or Brady Cook making the 53. Maybe one of them sticks on the practice squad. I don't know how confident I am in this, and we're going to go in after we go through this. I spent way too much time digging through rosters to figure out some possibilities for waiver wire or trade targets, so I can go through some of those later. But, you know, they probably should bring in somebody else, whether it's a veteran or a young guy for the practice squad. Like, I'm not as, like, they need a veteran in the quarterback room as some people are. Because, like, ultimately, if Geno goes down, you're in trouble. There's nobody out there that's going to save you. Like, Andy Dalton's not going to save your season. He's just a good guy to have in the room, I would say. So I'm not as, like, they need a veteran guy. But anyway, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's someone that they add either via waiver wire, trade a 7th-round pick, or sign somebody onto the practice squad kind of thing.
So, yeah, I'm good with it. I've kind of made peace with the adding a veteran at this point. I think I'd still like it. I think my greatest point at this point is, like, I think I've seen enough of Bailey Zappe, and, like, practice squad, I'm not even sure is good enough. Like, I think I'd rather keep Brady Cook as the third emergency for the practice squad than Bailey Zappe at this point, I think. Despite how horrendous it was in that final 5-game stretch last year. And I think I didn't even really realize how bad it was at the time, because it was just, like, survival mode as a fan with what was happening on the field. But then, like, the season ended and you, like, analytically took a look at Brady Cook and it was like, oh wow, that was, like, a historically bad 5-game stretch there. It didn't really feel that bad in the moment, because he was athletic. He was running around a little bit. He was heaving up balls just to try to make plays. But it was bad, but at least he's young. And after taking a look at Zappe in the Bucks game, I was just like, man, like, I think I've seen enough of this So open to the veteran thing for sure. Open to Klubnik being QB2 at this point. But yeah.
All right, in the backfield, running back. We've talked about this, the depth situation right now and the injuries and how that all plays out, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah Davis hasn't even looked like he's been close to practicing. They've talked about week one as the target for him. I just don't see that happening personally. Like, maybe it's not a long-term thing, but he's been out a while. But yeah, Breece Hall, Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, Kanae Nwangwu are pretty locked, set in stone. They've been giving Kanae Nwangwu way too many carries, I think, for a guy who gets hurt a lot. And is their kick returner. He got hit quite a bit in practice because they were doing some tackling this week and thud. And he got a lot of carries in that preseason game. Like, I'm a little concerned about him with that. But Andrew Beck's the one that I have on. I go back and forth about whether I think he makes it. I think if I'm predicting right now, I'd say yes. I go back and forth, though, because we're going to get the tight end. I think they keep four guys there. And Beck is kind of like a half tight end, half fullback type situation. So, but yeah, it's another position that when we get into the waiver wire targets, I wrote down a few running backs that I think would make sense.
So if Isaiah Davis is not there, if he's on reserve, do you think that Beck is the one who slides in and takes that spot, or do you think they reallocate it somewhere else?
Yeah, I think more like if Beck makes it, I think it's him versus like, you know, a fifth linebacker or a extra defensive, like a special teams kind of guy, because I think they like him on special team. I don't think it's more a factor in the running back room, I would say.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it was weird. I think we all expected to see a little bit more burn for Chip Traynham in the preseason, but that's usually reflective of something that's happening in practice that we're not seeing. They don't usually take a guy that people are excited about as a UDFA and then just bury him and give him no carries in a preseason game unless there's something in practice that they didn't like. So I assume that there's nothing there and there's nothing to get upset about. Sam Scott got a ton of burn in the preseason and then he got cut the other day.
Yeah.
Right. So I think they brought in another camp body at running back on it. Again, this is a room where I think you need all three of those players, and I think you need to keep Nwangwu like in packing peanuts, which I don't know why they're slamming him into the defensive line 20 times a preseason game. I'd rather not see that happen because he's a really, really good kick returner and he does get hurt a lot. But yeah, this room seems pretty static.
Wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, the question is if Arian Smith makes it, and I guess you could say Tim Patrick because he hasn't shown that much, but I think he'll wind up making it because they like his veteran presence and he can block and all that stuff. Arian hasn't really had anybody push him enough for me to say that he won't make it over anybody here, like unless they see somebody on the waiver wire. I think they like him in special teams. He clearly still has drop issues that hasn't improved. So, but, you know, the rest of the receiver room, it looks pretty good. I mean, it's Garrett, A.D. Mitchell, Omar Cooper, who's looked really good lately, by the way, Isaiah Williams, Tim Patrick, and then Arian is what I had.
Would you say that McClain, Pritchett, and Camper are the three that they'd probably like to stash if possible?
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point, actually. Yeah, Pritchett's actually he's actually made some plays as a receiver too, but he's a really good returner. Though I wonder if, I forget what the name of the guy was that they traded to the Bills a couple years ago that was a returner.
Brandon Codrington.
Yes, good memory. Yeah. I could see that because I think Pritchett's a legit returner. And McClain, out of like the undrafted guys, has been pretty impressive. And then Camper made some plays in the preseason game. So, yeah, those feel like the practice squad guys.
And Camper's just like that's an interesting player. He's just big, big, tall, fast. Like, and like you said, he popped a little bit in the preseason. Pritchett was last preseason too. Everybody was like, oh, Pritchett's going to make the team. And then he just vanished.
Well, he was on the practice squad all year though, which is interesting. Yeah. He never got called up. Yeah.
Yep. And I remember thinking late season, like, hey, remember how good he looked in the preseason? Like maybe it's time to give him a shot. And he never got it. So that strikes me as a player that he's back again. He's looking good again. Maybe the coaching staff viewed him as a developmental type of guy where maybe this is the year that he's at least ready to be on that like taxi squad that comes up for a game here and there, as opposed to just being stashed all season.
All right. Tight end. And this is one of the more interesting ones just because how deep it could go, Zach, but you mentioned it keeping four tight ends.
Yeah, I mean, pretty straightforward. I think Jelani has secured his spot. He has been really good. And honestly, at this point, I'm curious to see how much he actually plays once the game starts because He seems to just know what he's doing, and Sadiq is still banged up. By now everybody has heard it, but like Frank Reich about Sadiq, just real quick, like he basically admitted, like, yeah, we're not going to be able to use him quite like we had planned at the beginning of the season because he's missed so much time. I think he's closer than D'Angelo Ponza coming back, though. So, like, I think Sadiq will play in week one, would be my prediction. But, he hasn't practiced in a while, so I don't know how big of a role that'll be. Yeah, so I don't know how big of a role that be. Maybe I'm wrong and he's inactive on game day, even though he's, like, kind of ready to go. Like, I don't know. Like, all that's possible. But, yeah, Jelani Woods, Sadiq, Mason Taylor, Jeremy Ruckert. As good of a tight end room as they've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, I think this one comes down to, like, how can you push any of those four off the roster? You can't. Like, there's no way to push them off the roster. And so my co-host on Jetheads, Meegs, made a good point about, you know, Jelani Woods kind of being I think the words he used were like a dime store version of Sadiq, where you're kind of getting a lot of the same traits, even if they're not as athletic and as explosive as Sadiq is. And you know, that play that we saw in the Steelers game on the first drive, like, that's probably a Kenyon Sadiq play at some point in the future when he's ready, the touchdown to Jelani Woods. And Jelani Woods has some history with Frank Reich, as you noted in your article. So that one feels likely. And even when Sadiq comes back, I think what I'm wrestling with is, what is Jelani Woods's role when Sadiq is fully back? And is it just like a scout team Kenyon Sadiq, or does he have a package in the offense? Is he rotating in there on a regular basis? And so I'm curious to see how it all plays out. But at the very least, he's a good kind of dupe for the offense to kind of keep going and not change a whole lot if Sadiq takes a little bit of time to ramp into it.
Maybe they play some 14 personnel, just throw four tight ends out there.
That's speaking my love language there.
Talk about going back in the offensive line, right?
Yeah.
Offensive line, you just want to cover the whole thing in one big.
Yeah. So my concern, as I think we've talked about, is backup center, especially. I still think Xavier Newman can cut it as a center. Like, I can see keeping him as an interior lineman, so I think they'll scour the waiver wire for a center. But yeah, I mean, I have who you'd expect: Olu, Membu, Tippmann, Parham, Myers, Chukwu Okorafor, Max Mitchell, Xavier Newman, and Inez Cooper. 9 offensive linemen, some guys in the practice squad. If they claim somebody, maybe Newman loses his job, or they keep 10. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think the thing that I keep in mind as a fan here is, so it's Okorafor, Mitchell, and Newman are the three that you're like, hey, I'd love to peel that guy off the roster and maybe replace him with a waiver wire pickup. What I would caution against is, like, if anybody's getting cut by another team, it's highly likely that they are just that team's version of Max Mitchell, Okorafor, or Newman, right? Like, we're not going to get the X factor, the missing piece, because there are just not enough offensive linemen out there. Every team loves offensive line. Every team loves offensive line depth. And so if somebody's shaking loose from a roster, it probably wasn't that hard of a decision for them. And it's not going to be somebody that comes in here and totally changes the dynamic. I think I'd look more to, like, maybe does Muji want to swing some kind of late round pick swap to get somebody who's slightly above that level, still isn't going to come in here and save the day, but, like, slightly above that level, where the guy that was actually going to stay on a roster, they just have a need somewhere else that they're willing to part with some depth for. But you know, I wouldn't expect anything groundbreaking to happen in that position group, is what I'm saying.
I want to go back to the question from the chat real quick, just talking about running back and tight end. Lou says, can't Ruckert do most of the stuff Beck would do anyway as a halfback fullback?
Yeah. And my thing with Beck, like, he was playing pretty late into that preseason game. And I think you can get him to the practice squad, and if you really like him that much, you can elevate him for 3 weeks. So that's why, like, I don't know. I go back and forth on how I'm going to approach my 53, because he's like there are only really a couple spots that are open, I would say. And I think he's one of the ones fighting for one of those spots.
Yeah, I think that's what we'd all like to see from Ruckert. And that's what we've all wanted to see from Ruckert for a couple of years. Yeah. It's like, hey, you're kind of perfect for this spot. Why don't we slide into there? And there's a few spots on the Jets offense, like, that fans have been saying for a few years, like, hey, why don't you split Breece Hall out wide every once in a while, right? That, like, we see the traits that fit into this role, and it just hasn't happened for them. And so if you do start to see Ruckert play that role, I think that would be really encouraging for the fans. the counterpoint I'd make is just that Beck already does it and he's done it before. So he might have the edge in securing that role, but they're not going to cut Ruckert. They extended him.
Right, exactly. All right, let's switch over to the defense. Let's start at the back. Let's start at safety, Zach.
Work over. Okay. So safety, I feel like it's so there is I always forget this every year. I think like 2 years ago they made it a rule where you can designate two guys for injured reserve before roster cuts, because before you would have to keep them and then put them on IR. So VJ Payne, I think, will probably go IR because he's been out a while. He was an intriguing player and then he got hurt, so it was tough to see that for him. But I have four guys probably making it. Like I could see like maybe like Jerry S. Monroe push, but I don't think he's shown enough. So I Minka, Dane, Belton, who I think is going to be the starter at this point, Cisco and Malachi Moore. Solid group. As long as Belton is the number two, I feel better about that group than if Cisco is, obviously. But Cisco is your third safety. I'm fine with.
I said this on a pod last week. I'm willing myself to try to be more open-minded about Andre Cisco. I'm trying to put myself in the time machine and go back to last offseason when it was like, he's a Syracuse kid. He's from here. He's a Jets fan. And like people were excited about him being around. And, you know, he had that that game. I can't remember if it was against the Jags or the Bills where he pulled up on a tackle right at the goal line and got beat for a touchdown. And it just like it was a bad look. It was a really bad look. And I think it soured a lot of Jets fans on him. And like, whatever, he had the pick against the Steelers last week. Yeah. And I'm trying to like force myself to just be like, all right, try to wipe the slate clean with Andre Cisco. Try and see if you can just like let your eyes do the research here and see if he looks different than he did last year. Because pro athletes in every sport have bad years. They have down years. And unfortunately for him, his was like extremely visible and it rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way. But I'm like I said, I'm trying to be open-minded about that. My question for you, Zach, would be: how did Malachi Moore find his way down to the fourth safety spot? How did that happen? I think we all had such high hopes for him.
I know. I mean, even going into the offseason, I always felt like when we would talk about him, be like, "Oh yeah, we probably should mention Malachi Moore." Like it's almost like we forgot about him because of how many safeties they added or brought back this offseason. I mean, he's made no plays all summer. Like I can't think of a single one. Like, and it's unfortunate because I think they had really high hopes for him. And he's very clearly on the very back end. Like, you know, if I was going to, I don't think they're going to cut him. Cause I do think they still want to try and develop him. But like, if I had to pinpoint like a couple of guys that would be, if they cut him, that would be like, you know, the shock cut of the year. Like every now and then teams do that. He would be one of the ones on the list just because he just hasn't shown anything, but they just drafted him fourth round last year. Though they also drafted Arian Smith fourth round. So that draft has some work to do, I would say. It's been unfortunate because this was kind of a chance for him to play next to a really, really good safety who I think he's looked up to for a long time. And maybe he'll wind up working out and he just needs some time behind the scenes developing. And maybe eventually he'll come out there and make some plays and you'll see a different player. But yeah, he's had a disappointing summer for sure.
If they did cut him, he wouldn't be... You know, he'd be scooped up quick, I think, just because of he went to school, all of those things that we get excited about. He would find a home pretty quick. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like there's enough behind it there that somebody would be willing to take the flyer on it and make the mistake. And like it's like with guys like that come out of Alabama that have that pedigree behind them, the word doesn't fully get out until like the second or third cut. And that's when people are like, oh, wait a minute. Like he actually might not be. Mm-hmm. So somebody would definitely scoop him up quick. I think to your point, Zach, like because Minka Fitzpatrick is here, there's just no way he gets cut. I think that's part of, I don't want to say it was a driving force for Minka being here. The driving force is that we needed a safety. But like, I think it's a nice side benefit of him being here and there are, thinking that that is part of the long-term development plan of him.
All right, cornerback.
Yeah, corner. I need to apologize to Mori Bamba because I put him on my 53 after that first preseason game, and then he promptly got injured for the rest of the preseason. So he had an awesome first game, really intriguing guy. Now, either IR or you just put him on the practice squad probably. But, Brandon Stevens, AZ Thomas, Nashawn Wright, who's finally back, Jarvis Brownlee, Pond's still out. Like, I think there's an outside chance of IR for him just because of how long it's been since he practiced. Like, it doesn't look like he's any closer necessarily. He like ran a little bit the other day, but otherwise he mostly just like is on the sideline watching practice. So I don't know if they're just like, you know, handling him with bubble wrap maybe. I thought he was going to be back by now. That part's been unfortunate because he needed reps as a nickel. But anyway, Stiggers is the other one. I think he's had a pretty good camp other than his concussion scare. But yeah, I think a guy who is really like making a case to stick around is Jordan Clark, actually. I think he's looked pretty good in the preseason. He looks like he's a really smart player. If you can teach him how to play safety and make him like a hybrid guy, like I'd be intrigued to keep him. He's probably more of a practice squad guy, but he just seems like a gamer, has good smarts, and like he'd be someone, if we're thinking of like a surprise make the 53, I think he'd be on my list.
So Stiggers does not have a chance to start on IR, right? Like he's gonna
Stiggers is back. He's back practicing. Yeah.
Okay. So if Pons and Bamba are both out, that leaves them down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you would think that Jordan Clark would be the sixth that would slide in there.
Yeah. Or even if it's like they call him up from the practice squad if they need the piece or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just trying to look at corners and safeties as like total secondary bodies. I guess you're comfortable with 10 probably for the whole group there. Yeah. I mean, to your point about Bamba, like he did enough in that first game that he sticks around in Florham Park no matter what, like
a
part of the 53. The way Aaron Glenn spoke about him in the post game after the Buccaneers game was like, you know, not only is he big and fast, but he showed some pretty impressive ball skills also. And he ran like a 4.24 at his pro day or something crazy, bananas. Yeah. And so that's a player that you're just like, all right, like let's figure it out later where exactly he fits here. But this is somebody who needs to stick around. And VJ Payne is a similar athlete, by the way, that sucks that he's on IR. Probably you're looking at a full redshirt year for him, even when he's healthy. But it would be nice to see him start to work his way into special teams towards the end of the year because he's just such an athletic dude. Yeah, I mean, I think my big takeaway here is just like you need Pons. AZ Thomas has, I think, checked every box along the way here where you feel like even if him and Stevens are not typical corner one across the league, like both of them are like 1A, 1B enough that you feel comfortable with the position group. And it would be really interesting if Jordan Clark makes it, by the way. That's Ryan Clark's kid, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, inside linebacker.
Yeah, it's another position I think they need to go and get somebody. But Michael Walker, I think, is banged up still. But if he's healthy, he'll make the team. So that's Demario Davis, Sherwood, Kiko Maui-Noa, Michael Walker, Marcelino McCurry-Ball. Most of those guys are special teams related is the issue. So you need a linebacker who has a little more experience, I think, behind the top two guys would be how I feel. But maybe they like Kiko more than we realize, I'd say.
I don't think it was The Athletic, but there was a national publication that had a tweet or an article out there the other day that was like, is the Jets off-ball linebacker crew the best in the NFL?
Yeah.
And I was
like, it was ESPN, yeah.
I was like, who wrote this? Like, what's going on here? I mean, it's a top-heavy group. Demario Davis looks ageless. He looks awesome. Yeah. He looks, in addition to everything he provides on the field, I think the huddle speech that he gave before preseason week one was like, man, that's something that's been missing from this team for so long. So it's just nice to have a little bit of leadership back in here. But it's a top-heavy group. It's him, and you hope you're getting previous year Sherwood. And then with the other three guys, it's like, would these guys even make another NFL roster? Like MMB, I think people, you know, remember him for the flopping fish dance, and Michael Walker, he showed some, you know, some flashes of, but like, you just wonder like, are these guys that make other NFL rosters, or is this just kind of like filling out the spot here? And so to your point, I don't think anybody would be too upset if there's an acquisition made there.
Outside linebacker, Zach.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. I think you got David Bailey, Will McDonald, Kingsley Enagbare, who's played really well. Joe Asai's looked really good since he came back. Solid four-man rotation. Can Braden McGregor still survive another year? maybe. Like he's been the top backup. The guy who's emerged out of nowhere is that guy, Nate Lynn, who had two sacks in the preseason game, had a special teams play. Our guy, Daniel Popper, had him on his list of like stock up guys for the week of preseason games. He had another sack in practice on Tuesday. Like if he goes out and has another great game against the Giants, I don't know. I just wonder because like you have four solid outside linebackers, but if you're rotating them, as soon as you lose one of them, like they were without Enagbare and Osai at times at the same time. And you're playing Braden McGregor sometimes almost starter level snap switch. So do you want a fifth outside linebacker? That would be the question. And would you rather bring back McGregor, who has shown no signs of actually getting to the quarterback in the NFL? Or do you want like a young kid with some potential? You probably can get Lynn to the practice squad, I would think. Maybe not if he keeps playing like this. But he's intriguing. He was on the Lions practice squad a couple years ago with Aaron Glenn. So there is some familiarity there too.
Yeah, it just doesn't strike me as a guy that you bring in as just a camp body when there's a previous relationship. Yeah. And he comes in for all of Broderick Jones's troubles in the NFL and for the fact that he was playing late in the fourth quarter in a preseason game. Tough look for Broderick Jones. But this is still an NFL tackle that's taken starting reps for three seasons. So he still beat him. I don't care, you know, how bad Broderick Jones is. He still beat him. And there's only so many of those jobs in the NFL. And so it doesn't strike me as a guy that they just bring in and cut 2 weeks later. It feels like there's something there, whether they stash him or try to, you know, try to do some roster gymnastics to keep him on. Definitely a bottom two, three player on the roster, but seems intriguing enough that they want to find a way to keep him. I think fan wise, like I think you had Tyler Barron on your pup list. I don't know, man. I don't know what the legality is of cutting a player that's physically unable to perform, but you know, I think him and McGregor fans are pretty much like, okay, we're all set there. And I think that's by the way, I think that's like part of the appeal with Nate Lynn is it's just like a different body that we can plug in at the bottom of the roster at edge. So,
all right, D line.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to go on too much on this one. It's Sweat, Phillips, Onyemata, Briggs, and Daryl Jackson, who has been one of the surprises of camp. There's not really any other guys that I think really have a shot. Maybe like Peyton Page sticks on the practice squad or something like that, but Jack Heflin. But otherwise, like, yeah, the solid group, as much depth as they had on the interior in a long time.
Mazi Smith experiment is over?
I would say so. I think he's been back at practice, but like I don't know for sure.
The position everybody's been waiting for, and the reason I'm sure a bunch of people are still watching this at the 42-minute mark, is kicker.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cade York was cut a few days ago after him and Jason Sanders had a bad practice. I think they've both been pretty bad recently, if I'm being honest. I don't feel great even about – like Sanders at least has a history of success, so you hope that's something, but like – you need to see your kickers making these kicks in practice. Like Nick Folk wasn't missing last year. Before Zuerlein fell off a cliff, he was making his field goals. So I'm concerned. Like I know some people are convinced they're just going to get somebody who's not on the roster currently, and they very well might. There's a bunch of other teams in kicker competitions, even across town, the Giants. They have an undrafted kid who's probably going to win the job, but they have that other guy, Ben Sauls, who has made some kicks in the NFL. And I think there's some other competitions around the league. So I don't feel great about the kicker spot going into the season, but Austin McNamara, Thomas Hennessy will be here for a long time. I know that for sure.
Good. Well, I was just going to say, so are you saying like TBD or are you naming?
No, if I'm Sanders. Predicting, I'd probably put Sanders, but just because it's hard to predict like who somebody else could be, but I don't know. Like I could see the case for just bringing somebody else in also.
Yeah, I'm just concerned Sanders' leg is dead. That's all. Like, yeah. There have been kickers that have kicked into their 40s and they never seem to lose it. And then there are other kickers. And even Nick Folk, while he was accurate, there was a limitation
on him last year. Yeah.
And I think that's why they moved on from him is just because like, hey, you know, there were a few times last season where they were in that like 40 yard line going in range. And they just had to go for it because like kicking wasn't an option at that part of the field. And so I'm concerned that Sanders' leg is dead, which you can live with for a little while, but not if he's also inaccurate. Like weak leg, fine. inaccurate, not okay. And so it seems like there's a little bit of both going on with him right now. It was curious to me that York was the one that was cut. Now, I think Cade York kind of stinks. I thought he stunk on the Bengals. Yeah. Like, he had a live leg, but he just couldn't hit it. It was curious to me that he was the one that was cut, because it felt like he was playing in the first half of every preseason game. It felt like he was the leader in the clubhouse, and then they both have a really bad day, and he's the one that gets cut. So I thought that was strange, but maybe they just want a veteran in there. I guess my question to you would be, is there anybody there doing tryouts right now? Like, what's the long-term outlook? Are they just waiting and see what happens?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more you wait to see who gets cut than having tryouts. I will say just real quick, and then we can get some waiver claims. I know Tim's got to get going before 10:30. The other day in practice, when they both were missing, like field goal after field goal, like at some point I turned to somebody. I'm like, is this like on purpose? Like, is this part of the drill? Like, they're practicing what you do when you miss a field goal. Like, it was like they were missing the short ones too. Like, that was the weird part. Like, Cade York and Sanders missed the exact same ones, and then Sanders missed an additional one from further away. So it was bad, but yeah.
It's going to be an unwelcome way to lose a game if it happens. Really unwelcome. Yeah.
Well, and in this day, guys are just bombing field goals from 57, 58 yards. You know, it's a weapon. And now,
beyond,
you
know, yeah.
Yeah. Hit some waiver. And
yeah. I'll throw some names out there. And Paul, if there's any that excite you, you can mention. I'll go quarterback first. Andy Dalton is the one I mentioned. I don't know if the Eagles are going to keep four. I'm intrigued by Aiden O'Connell and the Raiders as just like a backup. Like, he has some experience in the NFL. I wrote down some of the names that are out there already. Will Levis, Will Howard, Tanner McKee. Like, nobody that's that exciting, frankly. But that's kind of
considering Will Levis' performance against the Jets. I just feel like
that I just don't be- like what, Levis is the one that Jets fans seem to talk about the most. But like, he stinks, man. Like, what, I don't want to watch him. I mean, I guess the J.J. McCarthy's like the fun one in theory, but like, I also don't really want to touch that personally.
Not really a veteran. I mean, if you want a veteran, it's not J.J. McCarthy.
No, yeah. I mean, we don't need to get J.J. McCarthy in the Jets quarterback development lab. I don't think anything good comes out of that.
I mean, if J.J. McCarthy's past coach couldn't get it figured out, then, you know what I mean? Yeah.
The thing that concerns me about McCarthy and Levis both is, like, they both seem a little not having a recognition of their standing in the NFL, I think is the nicest way I can put it. Where, like, Levis had that quote a couple of weeks ago where he's like, I'm one of the best 32 out there. And like,
yeah.
Love the confidence, dude, but like, you're not. And so
not
like,
so I much. Think
you need to find like a different path to make yourself, inexpendable in the NFL. And I think J.J. McCarthy's the same way. I think everybody, like, you've heard a lot of stuff out of Minnesota that like, people don't really like him. You've seen the clips of teammates like leaving him hanging on the sideline. Like, there's just stuff there that I don't want to get involved in. I think Aiden O'Connell is actually kind of like the one name that you brought up that I was like, oh, like, I'd actually be okay with that. Like, relationship with Geno. They could probably,
point. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Actually,
they could probably trauma bond over what happened last year. And like, hey, Chip we're Kelly. In a better place now. It's okay. Like, you know, and so there's something there. And Aiden O'Connell's done mop up duty for like 3 or 4 years. And so it's a role he's familiar with. So that name would be intriguing.
Yeah. Running back. There were some intriguing names. Caleb Johnson from the Steelers. They just drafted him in like the second or third round last year. And it seems like he might get cut. Eagles have Carson Steele and Damian Pierce, some experience. Adam Randall on the Ravens was intriguing. He got picked in like the fourth or fifth round last year. Special teams guy. He's big, 6'3", 240. Roshan Johnson on the Bears. Kendre Miller on the Saints. This is all from like me just pouring through like 53-man roster projections and things like that. And I put down James Conner. I don't see that being a fit for the Jets, but he's somebody that might be available at some point.
I didn't realize Damian Pierce was on the Eagles. Man, that's a player.
Me either, if I'm being honest. Yeah,
so much promise coming out of Florida.
Yeah,
and he played even pretty well in Houston. Yeah. And then he just vanished. So, I don't know if that's the right move. Is a guy that just like has completely fallen off a cliff like that. But you just need a body. You just need a body that's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Linebacker, I had a little harder time finding interesting names with experience, but some of the ones I came up with. Darius Mwasu from the Giants. He had 11 starts last year. He's a recent draft pick. Jack Sanborn from the Bears has 24 career starts. There's a guy in the Lions named Trevor Nowoski. So if you want to bring in a Lion for Aaron Glenn, there's Danny Stutzman. I think I forget what team he's on, actually. I didn't write it down. But he had 53 tackles last year, to kid from Oklahoma. Jack Gibbons on Arizona, 28 career starts. He had 81 tackles for the Patriots last year. And then Trenton Simpson from the Ravens. He was like a guy that was like fell out of the first round. And I think he's fallen down the depth chart in Baltimore. So he's intriguing to me. He had 19 career starts.
When we're talking about positions like this, and you know, guys that probably won't impact the roster a ton, but you just need bodies in there, I'd always like to peel from good organizations. And so, like, yeah, we're talking about getting somebody from the Ravens, like, sure, let's plug some of that in here, and let's just see what juice we can get out of that player other than what they're contributing on the field. And so, guys that have been around places that are winning, that I don't want to say know how to win. I don't think that's the right way to say it, but like, just what can you soak up? What can the rest of the position group soak up from that? So that's what I look to, is more like good organizations rather than great players.
Agreed. I guess they claim somebody on waivers at linebacker. Center, there was some more intriguing names. I wrote down Lucas Patrick with the Giants. He had a bunch of experience with the Packers. There's Cedric Van Pran Granger from the Bills, who sounds like the Bills like, but might not have space for. And I hope they don't get that guy, because that would be annoying writing that name out every time. Luke Whippler from the Browns, Jake Andrews from the Texans, 17 career starts. There's a guy in Seattle named Oluwatimi who has 13 career starts. So there's some center experience out there, whereas they don't really have anyone behind Josh Myers with experience right now, I would say. So
Luke Whippler went to my high school, so I would sign up for that one right now.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that should cover it. I mean, I'm sure we'll come back early in the week when the 53 yep. gets announced. But yeah, I think that's Friday, Snoopy Bowl. Can't imagine the Jets are going to play a lot of their starters, I would say, because they gave them a lot of reps this week and in that game last week. But should get a lot of Cade Klubnik, and it'll be a good opportunity for him.
They should kick every time they get inside the 40. Just every time. Just get as many reps as you can.
Third down, kick.
Yep.
All right, good stuff. Thanks to everybody for joining us on the live stream or checking out the audio. Like Dak said, we'll be back early next week. We'll talk about the final roster as it's set and how the game goes this weekend. And then it's onward to actual football. Exciting stuff. We are almost at the finish line here of training camp. We'll talk to everybody soon here on Flight Plan.